Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of the Jane Austen podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, everybody, this is Jenny and also Kristen.
Hello.
And we just have a couple things to tell you before we get started.
We really do. In order to help support our show, we are going to need the help of some great advertisers. And in order to find those great advertisers, we need to learn a little bit more about you. So if you will, please go to podsurvey.com/Buffy and take a quick anonymous survey that will help us get to know you a little better. That way we can show advertisers just how awesome our listeners are. Even if you've taken a podcast listener survey with us before, this one is new and important, so we really need you to take it too. Plus, once you've completed the survey, you can enter to win a $100 Amazon gift card.
What?
I know, right? You can get so many things with that.
Wow.
Again, that's podsurvey.com/Buffy, podsurvey.com/, we all know how to spell Buffy.
But it's Buffy.
Thank you, Jenny.
You're welcome.
Also, we have a store where we sell shirts and pins that are full of Buffy love and patriarchy smashing. In fact, we added a new Smash the Demon Lizard patriarchy tank top just a few days ago. They've sold fast, but we have a few left in stock, and don't be sad, we will have more in stock soon. Heads up that all of our patrons get an alert about new merchandise before the masses, and if you're a patron at the $10 level, you get 20% off all Buffering merch. To visit our store, head on over to bufferingthevampireslayer.com and click on shop. And if you want to come and join our Patreon family, you can do that at patreon.com/bufferingcast.
What's a tank top? That's like a t-shirt with no sleeves?
You got it, Jenny.
And welcome to Buffering the Vampire Slayer, a podcast where we are watching and discussing every single episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, even the painful ones, one at a time. I am Jenny Owen Youngs.
And I'm Kristen Russo. And this week, speaking of painful ones, we're talking about Season 2, Episode 14, Innocence. Stay tuned at the end of this podcast every week for an original song written by us recapping the Buffy episode we are discussing.
Innocence was written and directed by Master of Pain, Joss Whedon. It originally aired on January 20th, 1998.
Oh, and this is the one, this IMDb summary. This is the one where Buffy and her friends battle the judge and face unexpected danger from Angel, who has lost his soul after experiencing a moment of true happiness.
I just feel like these IMDb things need to keep a few things back, don't you think?
Right? No poetry at all. And also, who's talking right now? Who is?
Oh my gosh. Well, this Jenny? Is also the one where we are joined by a very special guest.
Sorry.
No.
That's great.
Well, now that everyone knows you're here, it's going to be even weirder for me to describe you as you listen. She writes Jon Snow conspiracy theories and also a lot of other stuff on VanityFair.com. And she co-hosts some of my favorite podcasts, including but not limited to Cast of Kings, Storm of Spoilers, Decoding Westworld, and Gen Pop, please welcome the great and powerful Joanna Robinson.
Yes!
Crowd noise.
Yeah, crowd noise, seriously. Well, welcome. Those are so many podcasts.
And that's not all of them.
Like,
that's
how many hours in your day do you not podcast?
Guys, I don't want to stress you out, but today I'm recording, well, you asked the reverse, but I will tell you, today I'm recording 3 podcasts, so...
Wow.
But don't tell the other ones. Yours is the one I'm looking forward to
yes.
the most. Because
hell
if anyone yeah. listens to any of those podcasts, they know that no matter what we're talking about, I will find a way to bring it back to Buffy because Buffy is like the most important pop cultural thing to me. So so excited to be here.
Gosh, we're so excited to have you on this podcast. And I mean, that's a great place to start because you do have a very intimate, deep connection with Buffy, as many of us do. But we would love to hear, you know, you're into Buffy.
Well, I started watching like right when it aired, and I'm I don't know. I've gotten to the age of life where, like, sometimes you don't like to talk about how old you are. But anyway, I'm as old as Buffy was. Like, I was exactly Buffy's age when the show came out. And so, yeah, so I started watching it, like, the first season. And I really liked the movie. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll see what, you know, this looks like a terrible knockoff of that great Christy Swanson, Luke Perry joint. And I'll give it a try, WB. And then I really, the first season we know is not the best this show has ever been, but I still liked it. And then, became full on obsessed in the second season. And actually, like, I've told this story a lot. Usually I tell it around when we're talking about the episode Passions, but for a while during the season two of Buffy, I was not allowed to watch TV, and I don't know why. I must have done something wrong, and this is my punishment. And so my friend Luani used to tape it on a VHS tape.
Oh, yeah.
And bring it to school and bring it to me so that I could then, like, take it home. And I was allowed to watch tapes, but I wasn't allowed to watch TV or something like that.
What?
I don't know.
What an interesting,
that is a weird rule.
Yeah, I could watch tapes on the weekend or something. Like, I don't know what it was. Anyway, and, like, I couldn't record Buffy on my own. I don't know. I don't know why this was the system, but this is the system that she would tape it, bring it to me at school, and then I would go home and watch it, and then I would come back and we would discuss it. Wow. And I remember when she, like, brought me the tape for, well, I don't want to spoil, like, your listeners and won't, like, say anything, but there's an episode in the future that, like, she brought me the tape and she was literally crying.
Oh my
and
God.
And she was like, I can't talk to you at all about this until you see it.
Oh no.
And then, I saw it and I came back to school and I was crying. So, it was like basically when I first understood what Joss Whedon is capable of. And that's not even this episode, which is in and of itself its own, like, crazy Joss Whedon-ness. But I remember you guys were talking, I think last week, about sort of the idea of the week by week cliffhanger between Surprise and Innocence, or like having to wait a week, and the fact that they did air them back to back on two different days. But I was like, I wanted to, like, when you guys said that, when I was listening to your podcast and you said that, I wanted to be like, I had to wait until the VHS tape came to me from my friend. Oh my God.
And you know what we learned is that not only did this episode air the day after, but it aired on January 20th and it aired right before the series premiere of Dawson's Creek.
Buddy. Yeah. What a lead in.
Right? What a day. What a day for television, like, January 20th.
Good job, WB programmers, because Buffy usually aired on Tuesday. And so, I don't know if that was true for the whole run, but that's the night I always remember watching, like, later episodes on. So if it aired on a Monday and a Tuesday night, like Surprise on Monday and Innocence on Tuesday, then this was, like, part of some, like, crazy WB strategy to, like, gin up as much interest as possible to lead into their new teen show. You know what
I mean?
Yeah,
yeah. They actually, this was them moving Buffy from Monday to Tuesday. Like,
okay.
Surprise was the last time it aired on a Monday.
Okay.
And Innocence was the first time it aired on a Tuesday.
And then it found its home. All right.
Yeah. It did. we learned that because somebody emailed us and was like, this is the first episode I watched. And I remember it was because I was, like, tuning into Dawson's Creek. Mm-hmm. And caught in. Imagine this being your in to Buffy.
Ooh, ragged.
And you're like, wow, this show is the best show on television.
So shall we jump into this episode?
Yeah, hell yeah.
Do it.
There's so much to tackle. We start with Drusilla. And I'm not, like, I don't mean to spoil anything for anybody, but we're going to get a jingle before this is up. I know where it's coming, but nobody else does.
Wow, okay.
But yeah, so Drusilla has this vision of Angel. My biggest question about the pre-credits, well, I have two, actually. My biggest one is, who is the woman smoking the cigarette in the alleyway? Like, I want to know her story. You know what I mean?
I think she's a singer of a band that plays at the Bronze, like, once a month. That's my best guess.
That makes sense. On DJ Night No Cover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
isn't that just the most brilliant? I mean, we're not there yet. But, like, that's just the most brilliant way to, like, introduce that twist with, like, the flourish of smoke. Like,
oh, my God.
As if we needed more creepiness in that moment, and then you have it. It's like, oh, it's so smart.
Oh, there are a few things sexier than smoking your cigarette out of the neck of a woman.
Are we married?
I mean, that like blend of nicotine and platelets, you know, just, like, really hits you in the sweet spot.
Yes. But I thought this was funny too, because I feel like, I mean, this is an obvious thing, but, like, smoking is associated with evil, and it was like, Angel has turned, he literally must have a cigarette.
Like, he can't even make it through his first kill without smoking a cigarette.
Right, you know? Right. And he's smoking, you know, the next time we see yeah. him when he's with Spike and Drew as well.
Yeah.
Because smoking is bad. Because smoking kills. You actually see a lot of anti-smoking propaganda in Sunnydale High School over the course of the show.
Yeah. Well, I feel like the 90s is really
Yeah, that was the time.
Yeah, it was like everyone thought cigarettes were good for you until the 90s, I think. Something and like that.
When we get Angelus... I mean, I don't mean to be like skipping past things. When we get Angelus, is it my imagination? I mean, I feel like this has always been true. My perception is that they put more like whiter foundation yeah. on David Boreanaz to make him look extra undead when yes. he's evil, like when he's Angelus.
Yeah, his makeup like across the board is so different in the episode.
Way paler. And then when he's in Vamp Face, it's like more developed. This episode yeah. actually won an episode, an Emmy for makeup.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Which like after you said that, I think that's when I really noticed his vamp face. Because he can like move his face. You know, when I remember the episode with Kendra when they were on the ice rink and they were kissing, it was like hysterical to me because his face, like he couldn't move his face at all. But now,
are you talking
like,
about Kendra, the vampire slayer?
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Yes. That's yes. the one. That's her.
I love the show.
Wait.
So happy.
But yeah. So, okay. So that's like the pre-credits are super sexy. Smoking out of necks.
Yeah. 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 Also, the whole like the pain is gone. I feel just fine. Yeah. Sort of like indicating that now that the demon has like re-inhabited this body, or now that the soul has been re-removed, that he is identifying like human qualities as painful.
Or, right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I feel like that's a huge thing in the whole episode of like, what is the real Angel? You know, like they play with that so much where he's like, no, now I'm Angel. What is the real evil? Or like, what is the real him? Is the real him the monster? Is the real him the ensouled him?
Right, right, right.
This is the eternal question. And the question the series will go on to examine. Does it ever really answer it? I say right. no.
Yeah, I know, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think so either.
I honestly think if it's Joss, he's probably going to be like, we are our monsters. We're both. We are our demons or like whatever. That's
right.
That feels like a Joss thing to say.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah.
So, sorry, does anyone want to mention anything before the credits? I don't want to take anything away from anyone.
No, I'm ready to go.
In case like people forgot from last week, I just want to give you guys props for mentioning that Angel put on literally all of his clothes when he out of his apartment. It's the craziest thing that's ever happened.
Dude, it's so much. It's so many articles.
So many clothes. Like, not just like, oh, I'll throw on pants and a shirt, but like, no, I got a layer.
Yo, it's like
lace up these shoes.
Like two socks, two shoes, pants, underwear, a t-shirt, a button-down, and a coat.
Yeah, there was there was something in his mind that told him, you know what, Angel, you might need to like get up, kill somebody, run into the darkness. You might need to be prepared for this.
Do you think it would have been a better scene if we like maybe just pants on, no shirt, tattoo, yes. shirtless, smoking a human yes. angel?
Is that even yeah. Joanna? Is that even a question?
I think they should have gone shirtless. I think the layers were a mistake.
Yeah.
I think fact that they had the opportunity to very easily narratively keep David Boreanaz shirtless and they didn't do it is kind of weird.
Perplexing.
Yeah, it's unusual for them. Yeah. Yeah. some unusual restraint.
So how about Buffy and her guilty walk of shame in her mom's house?
Amazing.
I mean, her house too, but like it's very much her mom's house in this moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just feel like she... I don't know, this really resonated for me, like that thing where you've done something, like had sex, and you just feel like everyone can tell.
Exactly.
Right?
And Joyce can!
And Joyce can. She's like,
she doesn't know what she can tell.
She doesn't finish her sentence. She's like, I don't know, you just look, and I want to know. What was she going to say? You just
right,
look.
Because at the end of the episode, she says, you look the same to me.
Yes.
So, like at first in my notes, I said, Joyce thinks she looks different. And then I went back and went, Joyce thinks she seems different, like you know, or Joyce is inconsistent with her observations. Whatever.
Yeah, Joyce is confusing.
Well, she's got a busy week at the gallery, probably.
Yeah, she didn't even have time to make a cake, for God's sake.
Yeah, oh my God, store-bought cupcakes. Come on,
no.
Come on, Joyce. I know you're like a frazzled single mom, but get it together. And I love how she's like, what did you do for your birthday? I'm like, Joyce, you don't know what your daughter did for her birthday. Come on now.
I know they're like roommates.
Yeah.
That gallery takes up too much of your time, Joyce. The thing I need to mention here, and I like warned you guys off air that I was going to talk about this, is like what Buffy is wearing when she sneaks back into the house and what she was wearing before is my favorite Buffy article of clothing, which is these resplendent giraffe pants of all the like too short, tight pattern pants. And she's got a few. These are by far my favorites, the giraffe pants. You guys noted, like you guys were very, you know, smartly observed that she wears a lot of white in the last episode. So, like, you know, she's got, like, cream beige on top or whatever. But the giraffe pants are just, like, of all of Buffy's outfits, that is my favorite.
You know, you wear white before you have sex and then after the traditional dress.
Yeah, the donning of the giraffe. Giraffe pants.
Obviously.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. Speaking a
beautiful
tradition.
Yeah, and speaking of giraffe pants, because when we did talk off air, you were like, "Listen, I need to check in on Kate Leth. Is Kate Leth going to mention?" And we were like, "Kate Leth is not going to mention giraffe pants, but oh ho ho, how much she will mention." So maybe this is a great time to go over to Kate and hear a fashion watch. We've missed you, Kate.
Yeah.
It's time for our friend Kate to give you the Buffy fashion update.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to Buffy Fashion Watch. I was gone for a spell. I was sick, and now I am back. I have so many thoughts about Innocence. It is one of my favorite episodes. It always has been, but I promise I will stick to the fashion. I won't talk about how the episode was a complete game changer for me when I was like 12 years old, and then again when I was 16, and how it means so much to me emotionally, and how I know almost every single word, and how that bit with Buffy and her mom at the end almost makes me cry. I'm not going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about Drusilla. Drusilla wears two of her best outfits of the whole show in this episode, and I love them. They have her in these deep blood reds, which completely makes sense. She's kind of at the height of her power right now, but she has her first outfit, which is this silk gown with this wraparound sort of tulle scarf thing that she has going on in the intro, which is incredible. And then again later, that top. It's brocade, it's scalloped, it's got boning. I think the back is clasped all the way up, and she's paired it with this long silk, or maybe velvety? I'm not entirely sure. Burgundy skirt with these suede heels, and she looks unbelievable. She is the total show stealer, and there are a lot of good looks in this episode. I have to talk about Cordelia's. Firstly, her schoolgirl look in the opening is incredible. Her little yellow sweater set and her high-waisted plaid skirt and her probably very expensive Mary Janes, perfect. And then again later, when she's supposed to look quote-unquote cheap, she looks amazing in a shiny silver trench coat, a studded headband, and hoops. She pulls it off. She absolutely pulls it off, and she looks amazing. And Willow's look when she's in the van with Oz and later at the mall, her fishtail braids and her big sweater coat situation and her overalls, she looks incredible. Buffy looks good in this episode. Miss Callender looks good in this episode, but it is such a moment for Willow and Cordelia and Drusilla that I have to give them their props. I love this episode, and I love this show so much. And if you made it through without crying, congratulations. I'll see you at the mall. I mean, not that mall, though, because yikes.
That was our friend Kate. She gave you the Buffy fashion update.
Thank you, Kate Leth. Never a letdown, always a take-up. What a dream. So good to have you back.
So Buffy gets through the Joyce lie, barely. I think she might be the worst liar.
She is a horrendous liar.
Besides Willow on the show, you know? She just, yeah. Like, you were at Willow's, you couldn't even remember that you were supposed to be at Willow's house, come on. But then she goes to the library and she has to, the whole episode, or, you know, a good chunk of the episode for her is, like, not being able to tell anyone what has happened because
it's unclear. Having sex for the first time is a special time in a young person's life, potentially.
Yeah.
Not that you have to have sex, but if you do,
Right.
You know.
Good job, Debbie.
There's a lot of feelings to be had all at once.
Yeah, she doesn't want her mom to know, or Giles.
Dad,
right. But she...
Yeah, oh, library dad. But, like, it, you know, if... I feel like if Angel hadn't, like, disappeared and she weren't worried, she would have come and immediately told Willow, like...
Yeah, right?
Especially since they had already talked about it. So, like,
yes,
you know,
all
she...
all that seizing.
Yeah, so if she hadn't been so, like, fretful, I think she would have pulled Willow aside and been like, oh, my God, oh, Willow.
Right.
Yeah, I seized it. But I did this.
Oh, so yeah, and then my next point of interest is when you know, we find out we're gonna research now the judge, because we found out that the judge is assembled, and don't worry, because Jenny Callender will go on the net. She's gonna go on the net.
Classic Jenny Callender move.
Yes,
straight to the net.
Straight to the net, and
cast
then
some bones.
And then Jenny, because Jenny Callender has a lot of really good moments, or I don't know if good is the right word, but just really Jenny Callender moments in this episode, because right after that, she's like lurking in the hallway.
Oh my God. Jenny Callender, like going full Harriet the Spy is one of my favorite shots of this episode. I feel like poor actress, like, you know, I feel like, I think that they did not originally write Jenny Callender to have this twist.
Oh.
And so, like, I think for her first few episodes, she was not playing this. And then they're all of a sudden, they're like, okay, just kidding. You're here to spy on them. And so now she's like, right? Because there's no indication.
No.
They laid no track for this, you know, like, because, you know, you didn't have to telegraph it, but there could have been scenes earlier in the season where Jenny's like trying to keep Buffy and Angel apart, or like, you know, asking weird questions, you know, something like that. She never once did. But now she's just like, I'm going to make up for lost time. I'm going to lurk in the shadows. I'm ready. Now's my moment. So.
She's going hard. She's got that music cue that's like, da-na-na.
Oh, yeah. And then last episode, too, with the like, driving Buffy, where she's like, I'll give you a rock. Like, just everything she does is like over the top. But good point. I hadn't thought about that. That, like, yeah, if this had been a plan all along, they probably would have at least given us a couple of clues.
Something.
Got nothing.
I feel like I remember that. I've got I have a lot of Buffy facts in my head, and I feel like that's a true one, but maybe it's a made up one. So I'm not gonna like die on that hill. But
now we'll find out. Now that it's here, it's been given birth into the universe.
Yeah, don't worry. People who are listening will know for sure, and they'll inform
like,
us.
Someone is typing an email right now.
Yes.
Someone has pulled over in their car to the side of the road.
Someone has gone to
Dear
a post.
Dear Kristen and Jenny.
Yeah.
Someone's gone to a post on thebronze.com and they're like, well, listen, this date in the 90s, Joss wrote this on thebronze.com.
Oh my God. Thebronze.com is an untapped resource.
I have found some amazing things on them because the archives are all still there. So,
oh, man.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Oh, I'm rounding the bend to my favorite
moment
of Drusilla's, but I don't want to cut you off. You look like you might have something.
No, go for it.
It's on me. Okay. Well, my favorite Drusilla line maybe ever.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's hard to say with her, but I'm naming all the stars and then followed by I've named them all the same name. And there's terrible confusion. I love her so much. This is my moment. There's a few in the episode, but this is where Drusilla gets her jingle.
Drusilla, you fill my heart with dread, and still I'm led right back to you.
That's also my favorite Drusilla line ever. And that was the thing about watching this episode, which I've seen this episode so many times, but when I was rewatching it, you know, in advance of talking about it with you guys, I was like, there's not a second wasted in this episode.
Right.
Every single second. Cause like all the other B and C and D plots are also like, evolving.
Yeah.
All the Willow and Xander and Cordelia and Oz stuff is going along too. And then you got Jenny and Giles stuff. Like you got all this stuff going on. But this like when Drew said that line, I was like, is my favorite Drusilla line also in this episode? Like,
yeah.
How is there room for the best Drusilla moment also in this episode?
Right?
So,
oh my God.
Yeah.
But it really,
it's really unbelievable how much good stuff is put like per square inch. It's just,
yeah.
Because I mean, after this, we get the beginning of like Angel's like an awful person and jealous is. And so like, he's just being so awful.
Yeah,
to Spike, and Spike is so emasculated, and it's just amazing. And it all starts here.
Like, we've spent so many episodes developing a love for Angel. So they really have to hit it out of the park in terms of, like, how despicable can we make this character in the span of one episode? Ooh, Turns out the most despicable.
Turns out they do a great, horrible job.
This is also where you find out that David Boreanaz can act, like, beg your pardon, but, like, right? Seriously, like, you're like, okay, you can smolder. You were plucked from walking your dog on a street somewhere. Someone thought you looked good in a t-shirt. They were right. That's fine. You can wear necklaces. That's also fine. You can smolder. But can you actually act? And then, like, when he gets to do this in this episode, you're like, okay. All right.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily been borne out for the rest of his career. But I would argue, like, this turn right here is, like, peak Boreanaz.
Definitely, like, a hello.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, like, the flick of the cigarette, the pushing of the box, the, like, way he talks, like, even the way he
talks. The way he talks, his face acting, like, yeah. He's crushing it and making us all feel terrible.
That great Chorus Girl joke that he, like, enters with. Yeah. Like, you're like, sarcastic Angel, where did you come from?
Yeah, oh, we've literally only seen him be, like, brooding and quiet and sad. Yeah.
And now we get these three.
Best thruple,
right?
Of the show to date.
I know, that's our, I don't know if you have a nomination for the Sexual Tension Award of this episode, but my nomination, and I think yours
seconded,
too, is the thruple Sexual Tension. We've got Spike, Drusilla, and Angel. They just want to do it all day long, I think.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah, for Sexual Tension, I have to agree with you. For, like, pure heartstrings, I gotta go with my boy Oz later. But, like, we'll do Sexual Tension belongs to the vamps for sure.
Especially the moment where Spike is like, you know, oh, the Slayer, like, really got you, blah blah blah, and he, like, growls and lunges towards Spike and then, like, kisses him on the forehead, and Spike like giggles. Like,
it's
like
it's a lot. It's a lot. This is the best it gets, because then it only gets, like, more sour from there as Spike gets more jealous. But, like,
right.
These are the good times.
Oh, the good times. And we, like, find out in this scene that Angel's ultimate plan is to destabilize Buffy. Like, he doesn't want to kill her.
Back to being Angelus, you know?
Like, he wants to eviscerate her emotionally.
Yeah, the only way you can kill this one is to love her. He says
that's
later.
Such a good line. And also, I love how Drusilla is so messed up. She's like, oh, you want to mess with her the way you did with me?
Oh my God.
Drew, that's not something to be real excited about.
Yes.
Right?
Just remember who you're talking to.
Oh my God. Yeah. Actually, I think that maybe that exchange happens where I almost gave Drew a jingle, but I had to give it to her early.
Pokes out the doll's eyes.
She pokes out. So good.
It's so good.
Also, I realized when I was writing down the Sexual Tension Award that their initials spell out sad. I just, you know,
this is Spike, Angel, and Drew.
No, no, it's really neither here nor there, but I was very excited when I noticed it.
Speaking of sexual tension and things surrounding that, oh boy, Xander and Cordelia have kind of an emotional exchange, and Cordelia is, like, jealous because she thinks that Xander wouldn't die for her the way that he would die for Buffy. What a great way to express that.
This is, like, the 1-2 punch for me for Cordelia. Like, this is how I fall for Cordelia. She first says, you wouldn't die for me, and then she scrunches her nose up. I can't take it. Yeah. I know that she's directing it at Xander, which is a bummer for me, but if I'm imagining it directed towards me, I'm in. I'm all in.
Before we get to this, like, highly fraught triangle situation that happens in the stacks, I want to note one of my favorite douchebag Xander moments.
Yes.
This episode is really hard for me because, like, I loved Xander when I watched it when I was 16. Mm-hmm. And then when I watched it later, I was like, oh, you're actually the worst. Okay. you're a bad person. I get it. You know, and you guys, I know, talk about this a lot on the show, but, like, that scene where, you know, Buffy's talking to Willow and Buffy's, you can't hear Buffy's sigh, but she's so upset and Willow's trying to talk her down and Xander goes, say hi for me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Xander, you're the worst human. But this episode is hard because Xander gets to be right about Angel at last.
Yeah.
And that's a bummer.
Yes.
Because, like, I don't like him to be right about anything, so.
Right. Yeah. Right. And that moment that you just talked about, too, Say Hi for Me, is so shitty. And what I love about it is that Willow, like, she hangs up the phone, and before they cut to the next scene, she's like, say hi for me? Like, she's yes. like, the she's not fuck having it. Is wrong with yeah. you? Which I appreciate.
What is your damage? Exactly.
Exactly. And this is, I think, I was talking to Jenny about this. It seems like the first episode that we've seen where Xander has really solved a huge problem, like, on his own, using his own skill set, using his own brain, without really even collaborating. I mean, obviously he needs, like, Cordelia to help him in this particular way, but I think it's the first time that he's like, I'm Xander and I'm gonna do this thing.
Yeah,
they lampshade that, right, by him being like, oh, I'm having a thought. Oh, I'm having a plan. Like, basically, is that what this feels like? Like,
yeah.
To actually be useful for one? So,
right. Yeah. Okay, well, I don't want to do it. I don't want to talk about this moment with Willow. I really don't. It's like, I know that the episode is sad because Buffy and Angel, but this...
But also, this is gutting.
It's so... I drew a broken heart in my notes. That's wow. how much I was hurting.
Allison Hannigan is, like... I don't know if this is your experience. My experience growing up is that when Allison Hannigan cried, I cried.
Yes.
It wasn't necessarily true with Buffy, like, because Sarah Michelle Gellar is a good crier, but Allison Hannigan is a great crier.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, oh, please, darling Willow, don't be sad. Don't cry.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. Please. We'll make it better. Yeah.
And she has, like, three tiers of sadness in this, like, one scene. Like, she's, like, upset, angry, and then she's upset, and then she, like, gets to this final level of devastation. When she says, you know, it just means you'd rather be with someone you hate than be with me.
Oh, God,
I can't. And Jenny, you've talked before about, like, Willow being used precisely as Joanna is saying it worked on her.
The writers talk all the time about, you know, that they discovered early on that the quickest way to the sort of, like, emotional jugular of the audience was hurting Willow.
Oh, God.
They love to hurt Willow.
True.
But yeah,
they read my bronze.com post. Damn it.
Oh my god.
What was your username, you think, on bronze.com?
I definitely did not post on bronze.com. I only read, but I did a Buffy message board on actually a Canadian website. Was my first message board ever that I joined.
Wow.
And actually, my login name had nothing to do with Buffy, so, and it's kind of embarrassing.
Aren't they all?
We won't pull that one out of you, but...
Thank you.
And then, okay, so we're just going from, like, sad to sad here, because they have this scene with Willow and Xander that's, like, heartbreaking, and then right after it...
Oh, no!
Not to give us a moment's pause is the scene between Angel and Buffy, which is...
First, we see, like, Buffy walk home alone at night to her house and then be like, no. But, and also I wanted to mention, since you guys did such a good job of pointing out, like, how she's in white the last episode, she's in black in this episode.
Oh, wow.
And as she's walking home, and probably when she walks into Angel's apartment full of shoji screens, she, a more minor key version of the Buffy Angel love theme plays. Like, you're like, oh, I didn't know this could get more poignant. But
here it is.
It's like even more dissonant. This is really, really hard. So,
it's just too much in my heart.
It's so rough.
It's
also apparently they initially shot the scene between Buffy and Angel. Either they shot it or it was supposed to take place in Buffy's house. Like, she was supposed to be walking home and then going into her house. And seeing Angel. And later when she's in the library and she's saying, like, I should have known when I saw him at the house. He was acting different.
She did. So they actually said at the house, and I was like, "Do you call that little sewer apartment the house? What are you talking about?
Right.
Not enough shoji screens in the world to turn that into a house." I'm sorry.
Like, where do you find that subterranean? Everything is cement apartment. Who is renting that?
Somebody from like 200 years ago. He's just kept the lease up.
Willie the Snitch, maybe.
But I feel like something that I want to talk about on, like, a larger scale with this episode is how we feel about the fact that, like, Buffy has had sex for the first time and it has had, like, horrific consequences.
We talked about this a little bit last week about how, like, usually in horror movies the trope is, you have sex, you die.
Right.
In this world, you have sex, you die emotionally.
Your boyfriend becomes abusive and
it's not just this show, right? It's like a network TV thing where like if teens have sex, something terrible has to happen to them,
right?
Just like in horror movies. But I'm inclined to give Buffy a little bit of a pass here only because they have other characters, spoiler alert, have sex later. Other characters have sex on this show and terrible things don't happen to them outside the norm of living in the Hellmouth. There aren't like direct bad consequences of later sex in the series.
Yeah.
So like, I don't feel like the series is necessarily moralizing. And I do think that this, you know, like Joss's whole conceit is like, what if the like monsters in your high school were actual monsters? So I say it like that, but I love the show. But like, you know, every time Joss talks about it, I'm like, I get it. It's a metaphor. So he's like, okay, so here's a scenario that a lot of teenage girls face where like, you think you're dating the nice guy and then you have sex with him and then he wants nothing to do with you anymore. And he treats you like trash. And what if that happened? But it's because he's lost his soul. Because an ancient Romani curse says if he has an orgasm, he can't. Anyway.
Yes.
This Romani curse has an orgasm clause. It's fine.
Right.
God, yeah, that woman who wrote that curse, she was really creative.
She thought of
She
everything.
Was like, but if you have an orgasm, then it's over, man. I actually
Does
had
that
a,
mean?
No, go ahead.
I mean, I'm just wondering.
Oh, like, can he not pleasure himself? Is that what your question
was?
Well,
I think it's supposed to be. I think the explanation around that is like true love orgasm. True love plus orgasm.
Orgasm equals.
That's the math.
Yeah. True love plus orgasm equals negative soul. So.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Yeah. Somebody please listening, just like make us a poster or something. That's good. That's really good. I had a practical question too about that, about the math here with the soul loss. Is like, it doesn't seem to make sense to me. If you're this woman putting this curse on Angel because he's evil and you're like, I know what would hurt him the most. It would be to have a soul and he has to live with this pain. Shouldn't the like math have been that if he found happiness, he would just die? Like, it seems weird to me that like if the end result of this is he'll go back to being the thing that he was when you cursed him in the first place, you know?
This like, seems like a curse clause of convenience.
Yeah. He got out on a loophole, I think.
Joss is like, I know we put a Romani curse on him, but what if there's guys, bear with me. Right. First of all, what if Jenny Callender is a Romani spy?
Right.
I know we didn't lay any track for it, but it's okay. Second of all, guys, orgasm clause.
Right.
All right? Let's do it.
I was just going to say, like, back to this, like, you know, using monsters to really get in deep on these, like, high school arcs and stuff. This like moment between them when he's like, oh yeah, that was horrible, like you were horrible in bed and whatever, as like a device to bring her to her knees, I just felt was, I mean, it like gutted me.
It's the quintessential like nightmare, your worst fears of what could happen in that situation.
Right. You're like doing this thing for the first time. You don't know what it is or what you're supposed to do. No one has really properly taught you. And even if they have, you still don't know what the fuck you're doing. And then and I just like brought myself back to that time in like high school and college when it was like, oh my God, what if I do something wrong?
Ugh. Right, and he's much older, and he has experience, and you know,
much older,
very, very, very much older. And then you know, they've built up for, you know, a short season and then a half a season to them saying "I love you" to each other, and then in the scene when she goes "I love you" and he goes "Love you too."
And oh my God! And like the finger guns.
Fuck,
even when she first sees him and like runs to him and hugs him, the way that he like hugs her back is the worst.
He's an evil genius. We love you, Angelus.
Right?
We're so happy you're here to cause pain and despair.
And your like logical brain wants to be like, how do you not know, Buffy? But like then when you add to it, like thinking about how she's feeling and how vulnerable she's feeling, it's like, I guess that's why she like couldn't see that this is obviously not the same person. Ugh. And then I'll call you. I don't want to leave this scene without that last line. They were like, I know what'll really put the nail in this coffin.
I'll call ya.
Now we have Jenny Callender and good old Uncle Enyos chatting up. What is vengeance? To everyone else, it's something that is like a trade, you know, tit for tat. Mm-hmm. But to us, it's like a living.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Thing that passes through generations, and we serve it forever.
Yeah.
Which is, like, pretty intense.
Yeah, I like this Uncle Enyo speech.
And we get, like, sort of the full skinny on, like, what this scene is for us. You know, them explaining the mechanics of the curse and, like, what the loophole is.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, it gets explained for the crew,
right.
The Scoobies,
right.
Separately.
Yeah, and I kept forgetting that, like, because if I remember anything from this series, because I having only seen it once and having the memory of, like, a goldfish, don't really hold on to much, but this was, like, so rooted in me that I didn't even remember that this was the first time you learned it. You know, to me, I was like, this is the thing that everyone knows about this show,
right.
Is this piece.
Yeah, I guess maybe we wouldn't have known before because they never explained it. I don't think they explained it to Angel as they were, like, cursing him. We curse
right.
You forever, but P.S. orgasm class. But my friend Danielle Nussbaum, who listens to your show. Hello, Danielle.
Hi, Danielle.
She is a huge Buffy fan, and she has been trying to figure out, like, what Buffy tattoo she wants to get for a very long time. Because these are the things you should take very seriously. If you get a fandom tattoo, something you, like, really care about, or any tattoo, you really want to make sure that it is the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, she's toying with, like, this is going to mean nothing to some of your listeners, but, like, a 555 tattoo or something like that. But, like, I think I would go with, it is not justice we serve, it is vengeance.
Yes.
Nice.
That would,
like,
be
across
my Buffy.
The shoulders.
Yes, that would be my Buffy tattoo. In, like, gothic, it is not justice we serve, it is vengeance.
Hell
someone
yeah.
Someone will be like, why do you have a Sons of Anarchy tattoo? Or, like,
yeah.
And I'm like, actually, it's Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Right. Yeah.
It's
the other
Uncle Enyo's, obviously.
Oh, yeah. God. Wow. Something that struck me, and this is the next scene, so excuse me if I'm cutting anyone off, but mm-hmm. the scene between Willow and Xander that happens after the Uncle Enyo scene, where, like, Willow's heartbroken, right? And she comes back to the school and is like, you know what? This is more important than my heartbreak. And it like, mirrors Buffy, too. Like, I just feel like, again, putting myself back in that place of, like, first heartbreak, there's no way I would have fought the big bad. Like, I wouldn't. I would have been like, everybody go fuck yourselves. I'm going to bed. Like, I can't. Like, I just think it's incredible that both of them, like, pull out of these moments. Obviously, Buffy's is, well, I mean, who am I to judge whose moment is more intense? But that they both pull out of this moment to fight, even though they've just been, like, knocked. I mean, I don't know. I just
crushed.
Feel like, yeah, like that. Losing your first love, seeing your first love, it's just, you don't stand up from that. And they do.
The thing is, like, I get that, like, Willow is hurt, but I just feel like her take on Cordelia is a little extreme.
Like, what do you mean? Like, the hating Cordelia Club? The whole spiel?
Well, like, I get, like, hating Cordelia Club. Very funny. Love it. You were the treasurer. What? Who
would I
was
give
taking
Xander
up
the responsibility of being treasurer? No.
Well,
it would be what's his name who dies in the first episode, obviously.
Jesse. Sweet, sweet Jesse.
It would be like Willow president, Jesse, all the other offices, Xander, nothing for you.
Xander gets
nothing
sex.
For Gretchen Wiener's by Xander.
But I love how Willow says, you have gross emotional problems, which incidentally is the name of my forthcoming album. Look for my album, Gross Emotional Problems, coming soon.
I guess, though, if we remember, like, the first episode of season one and, like, how awful Cordelia is to Willow in that episode.
Yes.
And, like, we all like Cordelia so much. We do. But, like, that's because the show has allowed us to see this growth. But, like, presumably she had been bullying Willow in that fashion for a long time before that. So,
right.
You know, that's something I, like, you know, the softer sides of Sears is what I think about when she says stuff like that.
Yes,
you know?
Totally. And I think she's just so heightened. Like, it's such a gut punch that I feel like
say the worst thing you
can
think.
Yeah, you're like, dig down deep for, like, the absolute worst thing you could possibly say, which with Willow is still not that bad. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Even for.
But over the course of this conversation, Xander starts to have an idea, the first idea he's ever had.
Yeah.
What a day.
It's a good day for
Xander.
What
a day for Xander. And that idea turns into a plan. But then The lights go out in Sunnydale.
There's just so many fucking things in this episode that made me so sad. And this is another one, like how they've grown to trust Angel so much that like Willow in the dark is like, oh, it's just Angel. Like nothing bad could possibly happen because Angel is here and it's fine.
Sure. He sounds like he has rocks in his mouth. I don't know why, but right? It's fine. This is fine. This is all fine. Yeah,
he smells like a walking chimney, but
this is all fine, guys. This is fine.
So yeah. And then Xander, there's this like moment with Xander where it looks like he has, you know, some sense of like spidey sense.
Yeah.
That something's going on. Cause he like walks away and he stops without.
That's what I'm saying. He gets to be right. And I don't like it at all.
Yeah. Yeah, if I could take away anything from this episode, well, first it would be Angel losing his soul. I would take that away. But then second thing would be Xander being right. I would take that away as well. But yeah, so right, Jenny Calendar comes out with the crucifix that she has prepared for this moment.
Of course,
she was lurking in the corner with it for hours.
Yes,
I'm sure,
just waiting,
looking suspicious. Yeah. And you know, and kind of like helps Ricochet. I mean, she helps the situation in terms of like having the crucifix because it's how Xander gets Willow. But really, the moment is like when Buffy is like, I'm fucking right here and I'm gonna fight you. Bull.
That too, but also Xander does have, I mean, I will grudgingly give him credit, and again later when his plan is good, but like, you know, he grabs Jenny's crucifix and sneaks up behind Xander to go rescue Willow. So we have to give him some grudging credit for that heroic moment.
Yeah, and a good move. It's like he really does like ricochet Willow off of of Angel.
It's like
a three-point move for sure. Yeah. And then, wow. I mean, whatever. There's a lot that happens in this scene, but my personal favorite is the way that Angel exits the scene where he like the doors like are closing and he like backs away looking forward and then moves to the side looking forward. Like it's really, really special. It's really
like a monster in like a haunted house ride or something.
Yeah, he's on a track.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Like
I didn't notice that. I have to now rewatch.
Yeah,
that.
Definitely worth going back for.
Yeah, okay. It's a really good exit. And so then we go back to the library, right?
Because Jenny Calendar's all like, Rupert, don't talk like that in front of the kids.
Not in front of the kids, Rupert.
What?
Yeah.
But those kids have seen so much more intense shit than Jenny Calendar.
I know.
Has.
She's confused.
She's all over the place.
Joanna explained it. She's confused. Her whole plot line has just changed right before her eyes. She doesn't
Who
know.
Who am I?
She's like,
that's not where I dangle it. I don't know what to tell you. But also, we have to like shout out to like the sad shot of Buffy just like fingering her Clotta ring, like desolate in the depths of despair. So sad. And then Willow, who's sharp as a tack as always, like doesn't get to the bottom of the case, but she's like, how did you know there was something wrong with Angel?
Yeah.
Just because he sounded like he had rocks in his mouth. You know, and Jenny's like, I see in the dark, guys, it's fine. This fine.
right. Yeah, and then Willow has her second like moment of reckoning when...
after Giles is like, oh, there must have been an inciting incident, and Buffy's like, gotta go.
Yeah, and then it's that meme with the like lady thinking with math symbols, and it ends with Willow and the math equation of one minus one soul.
Yeah. Giles, shut up.
I love that line.
Oh, it's so like, good. She delivers it so well too.
Yeah.
Oh, right? Just perfectly. And I love this like piece of Willow where, because you know, the last time we saw Willow talking about sex, she just said like wow a bunch of times and was like super giddy about it. But I like this moment because it's like, yeah, she of course she's like excited and like, oh my god, this is a thing that like we haven't done and you're doing it for the first time, but then like has the depth of knowledge and understanding to be like, wow, something like this is horrible, like this is something that no, Giles, you can't understand, and you know, and Willow can. Oh,
yeah, and Jenny seems to get it too. I feel like both Jenny and Willow are like cool with Giles, like come on, buddy. I like the whole exchange of like Xander drafting Cordelia. I don't like him telling her to wear something trashy-er. Like, what the hell, Xander? Shut the fuck up.
Also, she's wearing
like a sweater set,
like a schoolgirl outfit, like, and not even like a like that short of a skirt. And then Willow saying, "I'll call Oz. He has a van. This is fine. I can play this game."
Yeah,
right. My boyfriend's van is bigger than your girlfriend's.
Dad's car. Yeah,
yes, there it is.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, okay. Then, sorry, we've already talked about To Kill This Girl, You Have to Love Her, but I think it bears.
Yeah.
Repeating
using,
and this
psychological
scene,
damage,
right?
As opposed to physical force.
Yeah. And then it's just followed by this like sobbing scene where she's like curled up in her bed. And I just, the way that it's edited and like that they give it the time for like the closer pan and then the farther away pan, I just felt like that was really important because it's like this like deep bodily grieving that she's going through, and they don't make it less than that, you know?
Yeah.
Like they gave it the room that it needed.
Then she cries herself to sleep.
She takes off the clotter ring, cries herself to sleep. I just want to point, like, I just want to glom onto your conversation you had last week and say, I also had a clotter ring in high school,
yes!
Probably because of this show, I would guess.
Hell yeah.
And then when she falls asleep, she dreams of sexy times. And I think we get more of the sexy time scenes in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's still very artfully shot, but like more than we did in the actual losing the virginity scene in the first place, right?
Yeah. Yeah, way more. And also way more clottering. That was something that
lots of clotta.
A lot of clotta. Yeah. Clotta on clotta action. Yep.
I said when we were watching it, I was like, oh, there's so much clottering. And Jenny was like, well, Kristen, there's two of them. Like,
it could be either in any given shot.
Yeah, so.
So divide those clotta shots by two, please.
Yeah. Oriana's just has, like, really delicate hands. You don't know what you're looking at.
Right. Yeah. sexy time. And yeah, I mean, we got nothing in Surprise, really. It was like the lights went out and that was it.
Oh, okay.
So this is
the scene. Yeah. And I remember them doing the like, because Joss directed this episode. And I remember like I've always thought about how like the swinging light that they use in this, right? Because they just like,
yes.
Is really effective and
very dreamlike.
Yeah.
And then you just get a lot of fluster-producing noises. And your teen self is like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, I want to make sure that everyone listening to this gets to experience what I experienced both times watching this sex scene with Jenny. Like, in case you're like, oh wow, it's a sexy scene. You two are married. Maybe you like at least are normal people next to each other. Jenny looks like a turtle with her like head pulled back like 40 feet and her mouth like in one line where she's like, like, are you? I mean, you should talk about what you're feeling, but it looks like you're horrified, especially when there's a moan. When there's a moan, forget it. Her head, you think her head's back as far as it can go, and then
there
it like shoots back.
There are just like a lot. It's like very ASMR, like such close, tiny mouth noises. Like, I just feel like,
are you saying
inflicted?
All sex scenes or this specific sex scene?
No. This specific
provokes a turtle effect on you.
That this specific sex scene. No, thank. I mean, great, great job, everyone. But also, like,
yeah, it turns you into a turtle.
Cool.
The swinging light. I'm glad you said that because I didn't like. I didn't know what to call that. But that effect reminds me too of the. Do you remember the sex scene in But I'm a Cheerleader, of all things? But like, very similar. It's like light kind of like moving around and you don't really see anything, but you feel like you're seeing things,
right?
You know?
This scene really does not show you that much, but you know, as you guys were saying, like the audio does a lot of the showing for you. And then, it's like, it's mostly crumpled sheets and clotter rings and swinging lights and gentle moans. And you're like, oh God.
Crumpled sheets and clotter rings.
I know you've already called your next album title, but can the one after that
yes.
be called
Crumpled Sheets and Clotter Rings? Of course.
So then the sexy dream turns to like this classic horror lighting where it's like so bright and
so blown
out. And Angel's in the daylight, which of course is not possible. And he tells Buffy, you know, she has to look. What does he say specifically?
You have to know where to look.
You have to know what to see.
Oh, yeah. Whoops.
There it
you
is.
Have to know what thank
to
God.
See,
three brains.
Whew.
Take three.
You did it.
I had nothing. You had part of it. Joanna had everything.
Really, it just took one brain.
And then she fucking wakes up. This is, I can't. Like,
yo.
She wakes up. I'm sorry.
Yes,
I have to
please.
Just butt in.
Mm-hmm.
She wakes up not on her
doily
pillow. She wakes up on a leopard pillow. Do you think that the recurring animal prints in this episode have anything to do with the fact that she has had sex?
Rawr.
Like an elephant? Yes, yes, yes.
Do you think Joyce came in and like tucked a leopard print pillow under her like
Oh my god.
Joyce came home from the gallery and she's like, it's clear that my daughter's been crying and is fully clothed on top of her bed sheets. Let me tuck this cheetah print pillow under her head.
Yes. She was like, Buffy seems like she's gone through a rite of passage. Perhaps she's boned her vampire boyfriend. What? I know what she needs.
The traditional gift for that occasion. Yes.
Yeah. It's of our people. It's fine.
So then she takes her head off of that animal print pillow. And like, woo. First of all, something I didn't notice when we watched it the first time is that she puts the fucking crucifix on. Like the angel crucifix that she like made her upset. She like has it around her neck. She storms into the school.
Wearing the cutest, flimsiest top of all time. She's like tearing through the halls in a barely there cami. And it's like so cute. And yeah.
And then like the class is happening. She doesn't care. She just walk. I feel like even though I know her hand wasn't extended in front of her in like a grip motion the whole time, like I picture it like that, you know, just straight for the jugular on Jenny Calendar, throws her on the desk to a cheer. In case you're wondering what was happening in our living room at that moment, Jenny and I both, we both cheered. For her knocking Jenny Calendar down. Not that, you know, not that I want Jenny Calendar. Well, I kind of want Jenny Calendar to get knocked down, but whatever.
I mean.
I understand.
It's situational.
Right. It's situational.
A little retribution. Yeah. She's owed that. Yeah.
And to Jenny Calendar's credit, you know, like she immediately owns up to it. She doesn't try any of her like sneaky hallway lurking shit anymore. Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's like, okay, fine. You're the Slayer. You will literally snap my bones into tiny pieces.
I didn't know. this moment for Giles too. Okay. Oh. So like my ranking of like, if you hurt them, I'm hurt goes Willow 1, Giles 2. Mm-hmm. So like Giles being like, Willow being like, Buffy, stop beating up my girlfriend. She's a cyber pagan. She's the best. Come on. And then Jenny admits it and he's like crumpled. Oh my God. His heart. You know what I mean? Like, well, it's like, just so sad.
This is like a classic thing that happened. I mean, this is like a total she's all that, where like somebody, you find something out about somebody you're dating that indicates that it's possible that your relationship was never even real,
right?
To begin with,
right? The whole thing could have been a lie, it could have been a dare.
Was it ever real? Was it ever true?
Exactly,
right? And poor Giles, and then to Giles's credit, like. He gets this, like, it's like everybody's heart is broken in this episode at different levels. But Giles, too, like, he does not miss a beat. He's like, this hurts me, and yet I know what I need to do. Like, I need to stand by Buffy. I need to protect Buffy. I need to let Buffy know I respect her. Like, he, even though he's hurting.
And then Buffy has this thing, and this is, like, a recurring thing that the show explores of, like guilt and shame over being a girl or being in love and all this sort of stuff like that. And so Buffy says, so it was me, I did it. And like, you know, for her to take all that on herself when obviously, no, it wasn't you. You didn't do it. Like, come on, poor Buff. But like, that's her interpretation of the facts. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. Of like self-blaming and, you know, also like that attachment. I mean, I just think that's like the line, right, of like pleasure to, like, I can't. If I'm going to experience pleasure, it must also result in like something not good, which is something that I think like so many people walk with, you know, like there's so much conflict and like shame and weirdness placed around sex, especially as a woman that I, you know, that again, there goes Joss down his rabbit hole.
Yeah. And also Buffy has to sort of like in learning what exactly is going on and what has happened to make Angel and jealous, she has to indicate essentially to her watcher dad that she had sex.
Right, which adds like a whole nother level of
which whoever wants
nobody
to
wants
know.
To. But if, I mean, he couldn't possibly, I know I'm skipping ahead, but like he couldn't possibly deal with it better.
Oh God, the end. But like, Giles is basically, I don't think he actually cleans his glasses in this scene, but he's like inside. He's furiously cleaning his glasses.
Yes.
Because he doesn't want to know this.
Yeah, he's gone too far and he cannot turn back.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So then Uncle Enyos, RIP,
So this is a really fun cut, actually, right? Because Jenny's like, I can take you to someone who knows something or something like that, right? Yeah. She says some lead in line, and then it cuts to Uncle Enyo's where he starts talking. You hear someone come to the room. He starts talking and you think he's talking to Buffy, and then it's Angel. How did Angel find out about Uncle Enyo's? We don't know.
Who knows?
Maybe Drusilla had a vision. We don't know, but right.
He looked up the Calderash directory in Sunnydale.
Yeah. There's only one other Calderash here. Staying at the hotel.
He didn't actually know about Jenny. So, like, you know, there's no.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And you also brought up, and we're assuming a guess that he's staying at a hotel, but the other.
It looks hotel-y.
It does.
And otherwise, how could
he have gotten in?
Angelus just enter without an invitation.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right. So
yeah, it does look like motel art, like on the wall and stuff like that. So.
Yeah.
It okay, before, wait, but so. Before Angel does his art on the wall.
So. Oh, God. Ugh. But quick interjection. Does that mean, like, what's the deal with Airbnbs? Can vampires enter an Airbnb? I'm wondering for my future lodging.
Right.
Needs. Because it's like safety.
I think they can't unless they sign, like, you have to, aren't you, like, basically signing a contract when you sort of enter into an agreement with an Airbnb?
Yes.
So I feel like if he goes on the website and registers and Jealous 29, like, I don't know why I picked 29. It's not a significant number. And then like signs the contract, I feel like then he can go in.
Interesting. Yeah,
because wow, there's a lot here.
It is both someone's home and a place of lodging for others. Interesting. Mm. So the wall art, you brought it up.
What a bummer.
Because at first, when I first was watching this, I was like, why is he even, I didn't even think about the fact that how would he know who this is, but I was like, why is he even bothering killing Uncle Enyo's? Like, what, you know what I mean? Like, it seemed like he had bigger fish to fry than this. And then I realized, oh, right, he's using this as one more tool to manipulate Buffy. Like, he knew Buffy was going to be there, and he knew he could, like, leave her a message.
But it was also, like, when at the end of the conversation between Jenny and Uncle Enyo, wasn't he saying, like, maybe there's something I can do? But yeah, I feel like if there's a possibility of Uncle Enyo's, like, having any deeper Calderash knowledge that he could impart that could help anyone, like, you know, re-curse Angel, because that's what Buffy wants. Then he cuts that resource off, you know, at the knees.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, yeah, that's a good point. But yeah, so now we get Cordy in her beautiful gear.
Her trashier outfit,
which, like, I am super into, just like Kate. Kate was super into this outfit. Agree with you, Kate.
I had pants made out of that silver material in high school, just...
Absolutely. I think a lot of people had various clothing items made out of that. So that was a good couple of years for the industry who made silver fabric.
Yeah, I feel like at least two of the Spice Girls wore something similar.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Alex Mack, I'm pretty sure, was wearing something like that.
100%.
So, you know.
But yeah, and she has this wonderful, Cordelia has a wonderful moment where she's like, I'm not a soldier, am I? Like, she's like, Xander really, like, really hit the nail on the head with, like, who he needed to bring for this particular moment.
Yeah.
Like, Cordelia, without knowing anything, is perfect in this scene.
Yeah, and we find out that Xander still remembers all of the military knowledge he gained when he was turned into his
Halloween
costume.
That's
kind
of fun.
Costume.
Like, that's a cause of convenience I kind of like, you know what I mean? Because it's like, they very definitely were just like, hey, what if we retcon it that Xander remembers all of his Halloween stuff? And my question is, like, what does Willow remember?
Yeah.
could Buffy, like, rattle off, like, courtly etiquette or something like that if she needed to? You know, these are my questions.
Well, maybe wearing that outfit helped Willow prepare to ask Oz if he wanted to make out with her.
Oz's delivery of the one word when he just says, what? After Willow asks if he wants to make out with her is one of my favorite Oz moments. It's also one of my favorite Seth Green moments. It's just such great acting. And this whole scene, I mean, this is, Joanna, perhaps you want to talk about this because I know you were like, listen, sexual tension, fine, but everybody out of my way when we get to Willow and Oz. So
you guys, okay. Like, here's the thing. We haven't met face to face, even though I feel like I know you, but like, I'm quite tall. And I had like a rule. I still have a rule all through my life is that like, shorter gentleman of the world, but that a guy has to be taller than I am in order for me to be interested in him. That's my shallow, superficial thing that I need.
Yeah.
And my exception is Seth Green because he is like a tiny little man, but like I love Oz so much. And like, this scene is one of the main reasons I could like say word for word. I wasn't saying it word for word, but I could. Like, he's like the willow kissage, like, you know, even the cutesy, yeah, like Whedonese willow kissage. I'm like, yep, that's vital to my teenage experience.
Yeah.
Or when he says that's on the empty side, like all of this, you know, and then Allison Hannigan's face as the camera just like stays on her face as she just stares at him and is like, oh, this is what it's like when someone loves you or likes you. It's not like you're not pining after someone who treats you like, you know, just a pal or garbage sometimes, you know, like this is what it's like. And it's just like, oh, I love, doesn't get better than Willow and Oz, in my opinion.
No. Oh my God. And the way he caps it off with, in my fantasy, when I'm kissing you, you're kissing me.
Yeah. Ah! And it's like, that's okay, I'll wait. And you're just like, oh my God, okay.
No, so, oh, yeah, perfect.
Setting impossible boys for impossible bars for future boyfriends.
Yeah, seriously.
For all time.
Yeah. My note, and this is just the Oz and then the equal sign and then perfect. So,
oh, it's a good lot note of good math in this.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of great math. So then Buffy, right, we have this like scene before the commercial break where she's like, I'm going to kill him. Like, I know what I need to do and I need to kill him. And when we come back, we get, who I think was up for sexual tension award number two, the trio of the judge, Drusilla, and Angel. I just love the three of them. I love this moment where Angel calls the judge Spiffy, and the judge is like, Spiffy? Like, doesn't understand. It's just cute. It's,
you guys,
cute.
Maybe controversial opinion, but they kill the judge too soon, right?
Yes.
Like, we should have gotten two more episodes of the judge being like, basically like Data from Star Trek or something like that, being like, what are your human ways? I find them so confusing. Right?
Just like awkwardly kneeling in the corner and being like, leave me alone. Like,
I'm preparing.
Yeah, I'm preparing.
I have a bone to pick with the judge earlier says he smells humanity on Drusilla and Spike because they love each other, right?
Right.
And then when he touches Angel, he's like, this one cannot be burned. He is pure, right? Mm-hmm. And we were like, oh, Angel's evil. But like, but isn't the whole premise like that Angel's still unjealous, loves Buffy? Like, he's obsessed with Buffy. He loves her. Like, I think he still loves her. There's that like creepy obsession angle to it, you know, but there's, right. I mean,
but maybe it's that like through like what happens to that love when you take away the humanity kind of a deal, you know, like
alchemizes into something different.
And it's still there, but it appears that if it like happens in different ways, whereas like Spike and Drew, like they'll like cuddle with each other. And there's a scene, there's actually a moment in this episode that I found really interesting where Spike puts his hand on Drusilla's like stomach in a way that like it looked like
it was
a
like she was pregnant.
Yes.
It
did. Yeah. It was like, but the, you know, they, I feel like they just have this like very compassionate thing that I don't know, that I guess ain't, I don't know. We have to ask the judge. Anybody have the judge?
Yeah. Can you guys please get Brian Thompson to be a guest on your show?
Yes. Thank you. Yes. We want that. We want that. I actually was pulling up all of Brian Thompson's IMDb data very recently so that we can have him on. I mean, we can have him on at any point. I feel like he's been two characters already. Like, so then there's this Giles moment where
so good,
right? They're like opening up the weapon, and Jenny Calendar is just really good at like popping up in like the little space of the frame that isn't full of anything. She's like, "Hey guys, how do you need help?
Not now, Jenny."
Yeah. And Buffy says, "Get out!" And then, oh, Giles, she said, "Get out."
Number one dad alert.
Number one, he stands.
World's greatest dad
stands right by her. Stands right by her. And then we go to the mall.
Yay, the mall.
The second time we're in the Sunnydale Mall, right? This is time.
Wait, so is that the same set they use in Bad Eggs?
I don't think so.
Because to me, it looks like something else that's been dressed up to look mall-ish.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, yeah, totally.
Agree. Exactly. Like in Bad Eggs, it was like definitely a mall.
A mall. Yeah.
Yeah. And this, they're like, let's put a cash register on a table.
Yeah.
Because even the people will have shopping bags, but there will be no stores visible.
Yeah. Exactly. There's no stores. They're just lining up. I mean, we get like a bit of a movie theater sort of hallway later, but like, yeah, I know where people would lie. I would know where I would go. Like, I love all of that setup because it's like the bronze, obviously. Nope, bronze is closed. Okay, where's the other place? Right. Oh, the mall. You know, that place we've been once before and I think never go again.
Right. And I'm like, I feel like there's also a general lack of concern amongst the shoppers. Like, I know that the judge doesn't actually start frying people right away, but he actually does fry.
He fries one guy right off. Yeah, right off the bat.
But like even before, the guy is blue. He's the size of like a tank and he's just I just feel like that alone should have caused like a murmur from the crowd. And yet everyone's like, dude,
yeah, like, is this tied into Quest for Camelot?
Yeah.
The movie that's currently screening.
I was watching this episode. I'm like, soon I will get to see the poster for Quest for Camelot. It's like part of my ritual of watching this episode is like the time capsule that is like the only way people remember that movie exists is because the poster is in this episode.
God, I'm going to tell you what, if Jenny and I ever just want to take a week off and we need two co-hosts, could you imagine Kate and Joanna talking about an episode together?
Jesus Christ.
Because like you're like, I feel like the things that you notice too, because that was the first thing that Kate texted us about this episode. She was like, oh my God, this is the one with the Quest for Camelot posters.
I was like bracing myself for it. I was like, are there other posters? I was like, I know the Quest for Camelot posters there. Are there other posters? And I was like, no, it's Quest for Camelot no matter what the angle. And then I think there's also like a cardboard Quest for Camelot standee. So I feel like Quest for Camelot like sponsored this episode. It feels like.
Yeah. Wow. I would love to be able to dig
or maybe
that
it was produced by the Kazooies?
Oh, yes.
That own Buffy, basically.
Oh, interesting. They were like, we know how to work this shot.
Yes.
So then, right. So, okay. So, first of all, nobody at the mall responds. Second of all, no one in the Scooby gang seems concerned at all that there are just a million people in the mall.
A million civilians.
When they are shooting off. Does anyone know the name of this
weapon? I think it's a bazooka.
It's a bazooka. No one's been forged. I feel like we just needed to say no. We hadn't said it yet this episode, I think. No weapon forged.
That's
an important thing to say. It takes an army. No weapon forged. Okay.
Yeah, that's actually my tattoo. That's my Buffy tattoo. It's just no context. It's just going to be no weapon forged. But yeah, like what about the civilians here, guys? I mean,
I feel like one of like Cordelia could have been on crowd control of like, get out of here.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Something.
Right. Anything. Just anything. And then this, like, I love the slow-mo of Drew and Angel, like over, like leaping the railing, landing on the floor, and then Drusilla like throwing her Drusilla tantrum that her plan hasn't
spectacular
gone. Yeah,
there's so many comedy moments in this episode, in any given Buffy episode, but I never laugh hardest than at like the hardest that I laugh is the moment where Drew and Angel realize what that weapon is, that they're fucked. They don't even try with the judge. They're like, screw this guy. They look at each other, just screw this guy and jump. Yeah. And it is so funny to me. They're like, we got this big plan. We're going to burn the humanity. Oh, no. Like, screw our guy that we spent so long trying to assemble.
Yeah. Right.
Just like, bail. It's a big moment.
Limbs and torsos and heads pulled from every corner of the earth.
Right?
All that hard work.
Screw that guy.
Screw that guy.
Yeah, and we should note, I guess, that this is the pan up on Buffy is the classic opening credits shot, right?
Yes. Oh, it's so good. It's so good. And then my next note is Getting Wet Part 2.
Because I was listening to your Surprise episode and I was like, I hadn't thought about all the Getting Wet in Surprise. And then when the sprinklers went on, I was like, oh, and we're back.
We're back. Which is like hilarious, but also, you know, totally a device to be like, hey, remember, because that's exactly what's happening here. It's like right there. They're getting, well, I mean, they're not going to have sex, but they're like, this moment between them that has passed between them is a part of the fight scene that is about to happen. Mm, you know, like mm-hmm. the sexual tension is certainly there in the fight. And then the reason that Buffy can't yet kill him is because of like what has passed
what
between
they had,
them.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, exactly.
Oh my God. And he says, like, you made me the man I am today. It's like really
so
driving
dark.
It home.
So dark. And then, you know, probably a lot of people who are listening right now are like, guys, we were working to the end of the episode and nobody has brought up a key point in all of your podcast episodes. But don't worry, because Buffy can't kill Angel, but she can kick him really hard in the balls. What do you think that represents,
Well,
Jenny?
I think that represents smashing the patriarchy.
Yes. Nailed it.
My note here
says kicks him in the dick.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, mine is dick period, kick period is my actual words.
Also, like, please don't write to us, but I'm just wondering aloud with no expectation of anyone. Please, please do not write to us.
You're really asking for it, Jenny.
I know. But, like, what is it that makes it so painful and so sensitive for...
What makes it so painful to be kicked in the balls?
Yes. What makes it so painful to be kicked in the balls?
I think it's just a million billion nerve endings. That's what I think. That's my scientific hypothesis.
Are all of your nerve endings intact when you're undead? I'm having a hard time buying deep, very powerful, very powerful, strong, evil, fueled by his like psychotic rage.
Right.
But he's felled by a kick to the
right
junk.
I'm with you. Even if he had the same feeling in his balls as other people have in their balls, I just feel like the whole purpose of him as a vamp is that he's like the strongest vamp in the world. Like, I feel like he probably shouldn't have gone down as hard.
But that moment is for Buffy, and that moment is like,
yes,
for us. We need,
and I'll take
something.
It. Yes, we'll take
it. After everything he's done all episode,
we'll take it. And also, like, it's followed. I love this fucking line too, where she like kicks him in the dick. And then she's like, give me time.
Yes, give me time. Maybe that'll be my tattoo. Give me time.
You're going to get a full sleeve.
Yes.
And it's plus your back rocker.
It's just going to be my entire arm, a lot of phrases. The giraffe pants will be incorporated.
Great. This is great.
Wait, you should just get.
Yeah.
You should just get giraffe print. Tattooed on the whole entire lower half of your body.
Of your legs? Just your legs in giraffe print?
Are you saying permanent giraffe pants?
That's exactly what I'm saying, Joanna.
Yes. Oh my
God. I never knew it could be possible. I want to say really quickly that we did skip over the judge going, what does he say? Like, what's that?
Or
what
does that do?
What's that do? Yeah, it's pretty good life.
The judge, you're right. The judge should have stayed around, man. The judge is a great character.
And then, and also Cordelia has that great line where she's like, where they're like, go pick up the pieces of the judge. She's like, pieces, we get the pieces. Our job sucks.
Yeah.
And then we got that great moment where Oz just points at a bit and goes, arm.
Like, yeah, why is Oz not doing any of the lifting is a question.
Drove us here, so.
Yeah, and like he's integrating, you know? He just learned about vampires like the last episode
we
saw. So
right.
needs a minute.
Yeah.
He's adjusting. So Buffy says, give me time. And then we get we cut after this scene, after this very self-aware scene for Buffy, I think. Mm-hmm. That's what I loved about it, which I didn't say, was just that, like, not only is she saying, like, I will be able to do this, but she's very aware of the fact, like, she needs to build up her strength and, like, kind of is okay with the fact that she isn't there yet, you know, which I love. And then we get to your favorite car. I wrote down old jaloopy. I don't know why. I don't know why I wrote old jaloopy, but that's what I called Giles'
jalopy.
Car.
Jalopy. Yeah.
Yeah. But I wrote it jaloopy.
It's a Citroen, or that's not how you say it, but Citroen.
Citroen, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Somebody wrote us a very detailed email, including the phonetic pronunciation.
Citroene?
I don't
Oh my gosh. Sorry, person who wrote us that
No,
great
it was
email.
Great. It was a great email. We read it on
we
the mail.
We just can't remember anything.
But yeah, so Giles is in his, you know, they have this like perfect dad exchange that is really important too. Like, I feel like it is really, I don't know, it's just like this critical moment of her being like, I did this, like just really feeling guilt, and Giles being like, no, like, you know, you didn't, like, I can give you what you want, but I like, you know, I know what you're after is guilt, but I can't give you that because I don't feel that about you. And him saying, like, an angel loved you too, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Which seems so important.
Like, validating.
To say to her, right, that, like, you know, when you go through a heartbreak and you look back and you're like, I was such a fool. It's like, well, no, like, there were real, what happened was real. Like, what happened before was real. And even though it's not there anymore, doesn't take away from the fact that it was there once. So Giles just nails it. And she gets moments with both of her parents, because then she leaves Giles and she goes into the couch with with Joyce.
Yeah, but Joyce doesn't know, and it's so unfair. Like, you know, Giles gets to know this about Buffy, but Joyce doesn't. And I think it, like, without spoiling anything, I think, like, bearing that in mind later in the series is good, of, like, all the things that Joyce is missing in her daughter's life that her daughter is keeping secret from her, which is true of any teenager, but, like, you know, extremely so for Buffy. You know, I like how sometimes when Buffy talks to her mom in code, right, she sometimes will say things like the metaphor, the other side of the metaphor, you know, and Joyce can be an understanding good mom then. Mm-hmm. But she gives her mom nothing and just says creepy things like, I'll just let my birthday candle burn. It was like the most hot topic goth thing anyone's ever said.
Right. And what'd you do for your birthday? I got older.
Yeah. But I do love that they're, like, wearing their, like, matching socks and PJ. Like, their whole little, like, cozy, comfy getup is so cute, and their black and white movie tradition. And
It's so sweet. It really is. And, like, obviously without spoiling things, but, like, we have talked, too, before about this, like, coming out kind of a narrative. And I think that is what you're talking about here, too, of, like, yeah, okay, fine. Like, most teenagers don't share everything with their parents, but there's, like, this wall up where she can't even really tell Joyce anything. Mm-hmm. Like, she can't explain why she's hurting, which, you know, for me, a person remembering being a teenager and having my heart broken by the first girl I ever kissed, like, you know, I couldn't even, like, roll my eyes and be like, you know, Mom, this thing happened. Leave me alone. You know, like, I couldn't even do that. I couldn't say anything. So, yeah. Ugh, this show.
And we should mention that this is the first of the Buffy birthday episodes, which will become a thing. But there isn't a season one version of it, so this is where it all starts.
Right here together. Wow. So I think we've done it. I think
we have truly done it.
This was such a dream.
You guys, it was such a dream for me. I'm so excited. I could do this. Please, anytime. If a guest cancels, like, last minute, just, like, call me and be like, do you want to ramble for an hour and a half about a Buffy episode? Oh. I'll be like, depends. Is it season six?
Yeah. No. We'll be like, Joanna, how many podcasts have you done today? And if you say less than three, then you're on.
But thank you so much. And thank you for doing this show in general. And, like, for all the people who are watching this show for the first time, so that they can follow along with you guys. I just think it's a really cool thing you're doing. So thank you for doing it.
Oh my God. Thank you so much. When we first started making this podcast, Kristen was like, who do you want to get on the show? And I was like, my number one dream guest is Joanna Robinson, my favorite podcaster. Yeah.
And you guys asked me a while ago, I was like, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Then I do. This is like a common. Yes. This is a common pattern, because then immediately I, like, went to Twitter, I think, and I tweeted at you, or you had just, it was funny because you would, like, of course, to very telling, you had just tweeted something about Buffy.
It must be a Tuesday, Joanna tweeted something about Buffy. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and I was like, Jenny, it's fine. It's done. Joanna Robinson is going to be on our podcast. Yeah. Ta-da. And now it has happened.
I guess we can quit. This is our last episode.
Yeah, this is it. Oh my God, don't even say that. I feel like everyone is so scarred.
Don't write in.
So many people are like, will you finish? Like, I feel like they've all been left at the altar so many times with people stopping in the middle of, like, season three with Buffy podcasts. Mm-hmm. We're going to make it to the end, guys. Don't you worry.
You're going to go all the way. All right.
We're going to go all the way. How thematic.
Wow. Okay. So, Joanna Robinson, gift from the heavens. Could you please tell the good people listening to our show where they can find more of you on the internet?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Treasure of the I Hate Cordelia Club. No, I'm at Joe Wrote This. You can find me, my work on VanityFair.com. You can listen to a few of the podcasts that I do right now. I'm doing Storm of Spoilers, Gen Pop, and Little Gold Men.
Ugh, you want to read and listen to all of those things. Trust us when we tell you that.
I'm Jenny Owen Youngs, and when I'm not making this podcast, which is an increasingly smaller portion of my life's pie chart as the days go on, I am usually writing songs and recording songs and playing shows and being a musician, and you can learn more about me and hear some of those songs at jennyowenyoungs.com/buffering. And you can give me a shout, as many of you have been doing recently, in various literal forms on Twitter at Jenny Owen Youngs.
Yes, and I am Kristen Russo. You can find me on Twitter at Kristen Noleen. That's KristinNoeline, which is my middle name. My middle name is Noleen. A lot of people very close to me, people I've known for a long time, have suddenly started to say, wait, what is that word, though, that you keep spelling? Because no one knew it was my middle name.
Do you feel seen now?
I feel seen. It's a variation on Noel. You're all welcome. Anyhow, you can find me over on Twitter at Kristen Noleen, and you can also learn more about the work that I do with LGBTQ young people and their families over at everyoneisgay.com or mykidisgay.com, or you can just learn more about me at kristennoleen.com.
Buffering the Vampire Slayer is on Twitter and Facebook at BufferingCast, and you can also drop us an email at bufferingthevampireslayer@gmail.com.
There are so very many ways that you can help support the work that we do here at Buffering Cast. You can go on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/bufferingcast and find all sorts of fun things that you can get in exchange for supporting this work here. As a matter of fact, just a few days ago, we did a Buffy watch. We all watched the episode Surprise together in our secret little group.
It was so cute.
It was so wonderful. And, you know, it was really wonderful to watch with all of you that joined us. But what I loved even more, perhaps, than the fact that we watched Surprise all together was that because everyone is part of this little secret group now, a lot of you got together after we watched Surprise and created your own party and watched Innocence together after we left. Oh, it was our favorite thing. Anyhow, you can find...
It was so sweet.
It was so sweet. You can find out all about that over on Patreon. You can also go to iTunes and leave us a review. We love good reviews. We love them. So please keep them coming. Thank you for that. And of course, as we mentioned in the beginning of the show, we have a listener survey happening right now. You can find it over at podsurvey.com/Buffy. podsurvey.com/Buffy. You go over there, take a quick anonymous survey. It helps us get to know you. It helps us get some advertisers on this show, which is really helpful as well. And you can enter to win a $100 Amazon gift card just by filling out that little survey. So thank you in advance for all of your help and all of your support. You guys rule. We love you.
Praise. And thank you again for joining us, Joanna. If you don't mind howling out with us, that would be
Oh my God, I really want to.
Well, that's staying in.
Okay. Till next time.
That was good.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Shadow that lit up my heart, your stare that took me apart. How could I belong in anyone else's arms? Shadow that lit up my heart. Looking back, I can only ask, who was that? Who how it burned. back, I can only ask, who was that?
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.